Welcome to the Asia Climate Finance Podcast, where we discuss climate action-related business, finance, and investment topics, including issues around clean, green, net zero emissions, and sustainable energy, as well as climate, environmental, green, and sustainable finance. Hi, and a warm welcome to the 33rd episode of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. I am your host, Joseph Jacobelli. Today we're discussing sustainability advisory and consulting. As far as I'm concerned, it's a very, very important subject. Why? Because it helps corporations and other organizations in driving strategies as well as green finance solutions. Now, sustainability and green finance can be highly complex subjects as they comprise a multitude of disciplines. And recent years have seen the creation of a variety of advisory and consulting firms specializing on sustainability. In this episode, Wee Boon Siong, who is the CEO of RHT Green, based in Singapore, which specializes in advising on sustainability and green finance, discusses how RHT Green helps corporates in the sustainability journey, something increasingly important for their operations and fundraising. So Boon Siong provides insights on two aspects. He first discusses the actual nuts and bolts of advising organizations in sustainable value creation strategies and also the partnering with clients to capture sustainability opportunities. He then focuses on the green finance aspect of the work, especially on capital raising, such as a Singapore-based green fund focused on SMEs. Please enjoy the show and please note the disclosures at the end of the recording. Hello again, and welcome to episode 33 of the Asia Climate Finance Podcast. As mentioned earlier, today we have Wee Boon Siong, who is the Chief Executive Officer of RHT Green, and he's going to tell us a little bit more about himself and about the company in a minute. How's Singapore, Boon Siong? Everything good with you?
Yes, it is good. As I said earlier, I mean, the weather has been a bit hot. Recently, I mean, many people say it's due to the climate changes that we are experiencing.
Yeah, and the sad thing is that it's not going to get any better anytime soon with what's happening with climate change, as we see a record temperature here in Europe. But let's get into a little bit more of what I introduced earlier. So, Boon Siong, could you tell us a little bit about your background first, you know, how you got to where you are now? Thank you.
Thanks for having me on the program. I am Boon Siong, the CEO of RHT Green. I've been around working for the last 25 years in various sectors and different roles, including government services, financial services, the IT sector, as well as more recently, the sustainability sector. I joined the sustainability movement in 2017 when a friend asked me to help him with his sustainability system. So I helped him with the system and also helped him to do some selling. And that so happened that some of the sustainability consulting companies then approached me to ask them to set up companies in Singapore for the ASEAN region. Right. So I've been doing it ever since in the sustainability space, as I felt that it was a very important area, as all of us have to coexist in this ever-shrinking world, and we don't have enough resources to go around, and hence it is important that whatever that we do, we keep sustainability in mind.
Right.
The journey has been exciting, starting with people asking me what sustainability was when I started in 2017. Yes. Now we can laugh about it. But back then, people would look at me and say, huh, what is that? Right. And now everybody is talking about it. Right. But of course, saying that is that there are also different levels of understanding. Some people understand it better and some people are still don't understand it so well. And unfortunately, some are just cashing on it, thinking that this is going to help them make money.
Right. So, I mean, yeah, I guess you're alluding to greenwashing, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a minute. Now, can you tell us a little bit more about RHT Green.
Yeah. Okay. RHT Green, for us, we are a business advisory and consulting firm. We advise our organization in sustainable value creation strategies by partnering with them to capture the most important sustainability opportunities that they may have. We cover various areas in sustainability, including green finance, which we are going to talk about, carbon services, sustainability reporting and strategy, and we also do sustainability training for our clients. Largely as an engagement, but we also do public courses. For example, we recently got certified under UNITAS CIFA. We are probably the first in Singapore to be certified under that, and we are starting a series of training in that aspect.
You mentioned earlier that you do the ESG consulting, sustainability consulting side of things, but also I believe you do quite a bit of work when it comes to climate finance or green finance, right?
Yes, certainly. So for green finance or climate finance, we assist our clients to start their green fund, right? I mean, we can do it either by helping them to start to develop a framework, which then they can use it to assess what they should invest in or what they should not invest in. We can do it either as the developer of the framework. We can also come in as a second party opinion, or we can come in as and when to look at certain gaps that they may that they may have, right? So that's one of the areas that we do. For example, we are now currently helping a client to set up a green fund. This green fund will then support companies. In fact, this is to support SMEs in particular, because SMEs have may not have large capitals, and sometimes even if they want to embark on certain sustainability technology, they are unable to. So what the Green Fund hope to do is to help them to be able to perhaps start it with a little or zero upfront cost, and then they can then recover it to the operating cost. So this is one part of the green finance that we do. The other part of green finance that we do is we also help smaller companies to emphasize on the ESG value that they do, so that they can attract green money.
Got it. So I think the interesting angle here, from my perspective, Boonsiong, is that you're don't want to call it niche, but I guess you're the focus of the business right now is with small to medium sized enterprises, which actually are the guys who have the hardest time in raising funds, right? So I think you and I talked about it before that if you're trying to build a $5 billion offshore wind farm, very easy to get, consultants and bank lending, multilateral commercial banks, et cetera, et cetera. If you're trying to do a, 5 megawatt solar facility for a hospital or something, good luck getting the funding. So I think what you're doing is very, very, very interesting. And is just to get into, I guess that was part of the conversation we want to get into, because we wanted to focus on a couple of things, which is kind of what's going on in Singapore. And given you're an active player in Singapore, you're very, very well placed to talk about Singapore's role in terms of green finance for the rest of the region. And then also, I think it would be quite interesting to better understand from your personal perspective the outlook, in the future. So those are the two areas that we're going to be speaking about. But starting with the first part of it, could you tell us a little bit more about just very broad headlines on what's going on with green finance in Singapore, and also Singapore's role in green finance for the rest of Southeast Asia?
But before I jump into that, perhaps I explain a bit more about some of the other services that we cover as well, other than green finance. Would that be all right?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so essentially we do four key services, like what I mentioned earlier. Green finance is one of them. The second service that we do is would be the carbon services. So on carbon, we help our clients to baseline their carbon footprint and then work out a plan towards net zero. So that is on the corporate basis. At another level, we also help them to work out their products and services carbon emissions. This is important as more and more MNCs require their suppliers to provide the carbon footprint of the products and services that they procure, right? Mm-hmm. This is also to prepare some of the clients who are currently exporting to Europe, because in time to come, there will also be import carbon tax in Europe. So it is important that the companies know what their product carbon footprints are and then do something about it, perhaps to reduce it so that they can then reduce the amount of tax going forward when Europe starts to impose the import carbon tax.
Got it.
The other broad area is then on corporate sustainability. Here, we help our clients move up the sustainability maturity level, right? So from the lowest level where the companies are doing business as usual to the next level where companies only focus on compliance. If you just focus on compliance, it's all about the cost of compliance. And that is very, how should I say, it is very tough for everybody because when you talk about compliance, people want to do the minimum just to get a tick on the box. But then at the other end of the spectrum, what we want to do is to help companies leverage on sustainability to provide differentiated products and services to their customers. Okay, in this way, they can increase the value that they provide to their customers, and as a result, increase their revenue too. Okay, a very simple example, right? I mean, the things that if you look at many motor car workshops, unfortunately, a lot of them are still not prepared for the future. A lot of them are still servicing the internal combustion engine cars, right? Saying that there are 90% of their customers are still driving IC cars. Maybe only 2-3% of cars in Singapore are the EV cars, right? Mm. Unfortunately, if they do this, I mean, as and when any of their customers switch to an EV car, there's a high chance that they will lose that customer forever, right? On the other hand, if they extend their services to be able to service EV cars, they are then able to attract customers from other motor car workshop who are not ready to service such clients at this point in time. Mm. And with that, they can potentially keep the client forever into the future. So it is important that companies look into the future and start to prepare for what is coming so that they can then attract new clients and new customers and increase their scope of work as well as their revenue.
And I think that's a really great example, because again, it falls into that small to medium sized enterprises that remain largely ignored by policymakers, lenders, and investors. So that's a great example. Do you think we maybe move on to speak a little bit about what's going on in Singapore for those who are not familiar with Singapore's role, in very, very important role in my view, in green and climate finance for Southeast Asia and perhaps beyond? Could you tell us a little bit, kind of general lines on what is going on in Singapore and what's the latest trends there?
Sure.
And I think you wanted to mention a couple of things about transition finance as well, right?
Yes, correct. So there is also transition finance, because not everything is ready for green finance. There are also projects which are not that ready, and hence that's where green finance comes in. So what we advocate most of the time is that companies have assets, right? So what normally we will help them to do is to separate the asset into two portfolios, a green portfolio and a normal portfolio, right? And then, the green portfolio can then be then sort of marketed as such, whereas the normal one would then be where some work has to be done, and that's where transition finance comes in. As it stands, there are about, 5,500 coal-fired power stations in Asia alone, emitting about 4.5 billion tons of CO2 every year, right? There are some people who are saying that those should be shut down, but if you look at it, if they are shut down tomorrow, a large part of Asia will be without electricity, and the quality of life will be greatly affected, right? So I don't think that should be the case, but I think more important is how can we help them to transit? Okay, there must be a clear plan and a clear time frame on how this can transit to a green, to be part of a green economy. I think that's more important. So all these things are part and parcel of a transition finance. In Singapore, it was last month, Deputy Prime Minister, as well as Minister for Finance and the MAS Deputy Chairman, Mr. Lawrence Wong, announced the launch of the MAS Finance for Net Zero Action Plan. This is part of the transition finance that the MAS is going to look at to support projects and technology that can help in the transition towards a net zero economy.
So, in terms of Singapore, we know a couple of facts. One is that in the last, 2 or 3 years, despite COVID, Singapore has seen a high concentration or creation of impact funds, whether it's PE or equity investment funds as well, all related to green investments, and it's taken a major role. We've also seen the setup of some carbon funds, some carbon exchanges. Actually, we had the co-CEO of ACX just in the last episode. So in your view, is Singapore kind of pushing all the right buttons to become the, or at least a leading green finance center in the region?
Yes, that's certainly something that we are hoping for. The last few years have been difficult years for many people, for many countries. And unfortunately, a lot of the, the cracks appeared in the last few years when countries become of their own economy, right? That didn't help the world to move ahead. In fact, that probably slowed the world. And in fact, some of the countries even set back or share those. However, in Singapore, we felt that it was important that we kept the doors open, that investments still come into Singapore if they want to, and the rules of the game remained the same during COVID and outside of COVID. And that was when people start to have more confidence of Singapore, because they know that in good times and in bad times, the policies remain the same, right? So actually, in the last few years, we attracted probably the largest FDI ever, because many other countries closed their doors. And then that also gives us the opportunity to do something good, right? I mean, as we want to be more ready for the new economy, the new green economy, that also helps us to be able to select what we want, given that there are many people who want to come into Singapore to invest. So that gives us a lot of opportunity in that aspect.
Yeah, I mean, it's been very interesting, because definitely, at least on the human capital side of things, that's grown exponentially. I'm sure that RHT Green's business is probably is probably booming, as a lot of other of your peers' businesses is booming as well. One thing that I wanted to also talk about a little bit more is when it comes to these green funds. I want to talk about green funds out of Singapore from two aspects. One is what is exactly happening in with green funds creations in Singapore? What's the general trend? What kind of funds are we talking about? And secondly, you know, there's an issue of greenwashing. In my personal opinion, I think I've mentioned that a couple of times in a couple of different episodes. I think some of the greenwashing is voluntary. You know, the boss just says to the sustainability head, "Hey, make this green. Just paint it green as well as you can." But in a lot of cases, and I don't know what percentage, it's also a lack of understanding. And so a company may be doing something which is perceived as greenwashing. They don't really mean it to make it greenwashing, but it ends up being greenwashing. So do you think that we can talk about these two aspects? One is what are the, you know, the green fund creation? What's the trends there? What kind of funds are we talking about? If you have an idea about kind of monetary amounts of, you know, what's the size of these funds? What kind of returns are they looking at, you know, those things. And then afterwards, we can perhaps have a short conversation about the greenwashing as a risk as well.
Yeah. I suppose one of the questions that I always get asked is whether green funds perform better than normal funds.
Mm.
Right. That's always a question, right? I mean, although people want to do good, but they want to do better in terms of financial returns. Yeah. So if you look at it, I mean, there have been some studies done in this aspect. According to a 10-year study, funds that consider environment, the ESG factors were able to outlast and outperform their traditional counterparts. Over a longer term, a medium to longer term, it is found that 77% of these ESG-labeled funds still exist, while probably about half of the traditional non-ESG ones probably are not doing as well comparatively.
Mm.
Right. So I suppose the main reason is that the ESG companies, there's probably a positive correlation between ESG consideration and how the company is being run, right? So overall, these companies are probably better managed, and hence they can last longer. So, but saying that, that's one aspect of it. I think it's the risk management side.
Mm.
These companies are probably better in terms of risk management. But saying that is that there is also the upside we are looking at. If you ask me, I mean, in the next 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, I would say that this will perform better because I suppose there are always short-term fluctuations and so on. But I can certainly say that over a longer-term period, maybe 8 to 10 years, the performance will definitely be a lot better for the ESG companies than for the non-ESG ones, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are some simple reasons, right? Number one, regulations are changing. Right. They are changing to favor corporates who are ready. Companies who are not ready now will then have to fork out more money to become compliant, be in terms of cleaning out their pollutants, reducing their waste, or cutting down carbon emissions. So there have to be investments in this aspect, which will then set them back. Next. Customer preferences, right? They are also changing. More consumers are now prepared to pay a little more for a more sustainable product or service. Like what I mentioned just now, I think many of the MNCs already have procurement policies which favor suppliers who are already more ESG ready. So that's where they are going to have the advantage as well. Companies who are not ESG ready may at times not even be allowed to participate in certain tenders from the some of the MNCs. So this are going to happen, and there's going to be a critical turning point. It could be in 3 years' time, in 4 years' time. I think that's something that that's the million dollar question that I can't answer. But it will definitely come. It's just a question of when, right? So it is important. And on the other aspect is that investor sentiments will also change, right? I mean, with the regulation changes, with the customer preference changing, investor sentiments will also be changing, right? So it is also important that we are ready when all these things happen, so that the funds, the companies can ride the wave when the tide turns.
In your experience so far with the kind of funds that you've had discussions with, or you've been witnessing around the market, what is going on there? I mean, are there more funds appearing? Is there a slowdown, an acceleration of fund formation?
There's definitely an increase in the number of funds. In fact, that is a huge increase in the number of questions asked and activity. But of course, the number of funds that are being set up have increased, but probably not increased at the same level. There's a lot more talk than action at this point in time. But definitely more and more of it will soon happen. But again, saying that is that we also have to be mindful what's the objective behind that, right? I suppose that brings us in a way to the topic of greenwashing. If a company set the wrong objective, okay. So for example, I mean, one company start the green fund because they want to make more money. Right. Making money is but of course, if you start with the objective of making money and then talk about what you want to do, then I suppose that is different from saying that you want to do the right things and doing the good thing for society, and as a result, you benefit from it. The latter is probably the right way to do it, because once you do the right things, the financial return will come. But if you start with saying that you want to make money, the returns may come, but then it may also bring you higher risk. Right. So I have some clients who ask me why they cannot invest in certain high return projects. Right. So I always tell them that the thing is that it is how they want to run their fund. I mean, if the fund is called a make money fund, they can invest in anything. But if they want to run the green fund, then I think there are some rules that they have to follow. Right. It's okay to have two funds, right? I mean, but you cannot mix them, right? The green fund must follow certain rules, so that the people who put money into them can then know that the money is being used correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that there are many other examples as well. I mean, if you talk about it, I mean, carbon credits as well. There are many people who come to us talk about carbon credit, but the first thing is how can they make money from carbon credit, right? So there are examples where people take conserved lands and derive carbon credits from it. This is not correct, because the thing is that conserved land is already there and you'll be there for the next 10, 20 years, right? So if you still get people to pay carbon credit for it, there will be serious consequences, as those people who think that they are buying carbon credits will then be less, how should I say, will think that they already had a carbon credit and they can then do the carbon emission. Okay, this will lead to more serious global warming if we go along this line. But however, if a company take a piece of wasteland, transform the land into a forest and apply for conservation of it, then I think they will probably qualify for carbon credit. So again, the objectives of it is very important, whether you want to do good and as a result make money from it, or you just want to make money and try to find something to support it. The second area would then be the interdependencies. All projects have interdependency. So you may have good intention to do certain things, but the project may have a bigger impact than we think it is initially, right? So for example, if you talk about a hydro power plant, right? So certain hydropower plants are certainly deemed as green projects, but then certain ones may not be because they may destroy local society, local villages, or they may also destroy local forest and impact on the biodiversity. So the thing is that we also have to make sure that the downstream impacts are considered, right? So there are also examples where wind-powered plants, okay? I mean, again, the starting point is good, but then sometimes it may also affect the way that the birds, their migratory path and so on. So some of these things will have to be considered in totality before we invest.
Got it.
Then the third area is potential execution, right? Mm. Companies who start with the right objectives but do not execute correctly, they also run the risk of greenwashing. Okay. So it is very important that proper organizational structure and procedures are set up to govern the green to govern the green money. So as to reduce the risk of greenwashing. Right? Very often is that at the start of the project, there will be proper assessment of it. But then it is also important that we do regular checking and monitoring to ensure that the project is executed the way it's supposed to. Right? There must be certain thresholds where if the project goes out of the threshold, that it has to be reassessed again to see whether it is still a good project to invest in or certain corrective actions are taken to bring them back to the correct.
That's great, Byung-Seong. It's in all these facets are really key and really important, really interesting. Now, do you think we could perhaps talk about some, put a little bit of color in this and talk about maybe two, three examples of some of the, I know you already mentioned a couple of examples, so maybe a few more examples on, some of how you've been working with your clients.
Sure. Okay. We did a green innovation fund with one of our clients. Okay. When we started the project, I suppose that we have to be clear on what are the goals and objectives of the project, right? So when we ask them what they want to achieve or what are the SDGs that are important to them, we get the answer that all the SDGs are important. I mean, no doubt, all the SDGs are important, but they cannot be equally important, right? If they're all equally important, then I think it's very hard to do anything because there are just too many things to take care of.
Yes, of course.
And we end up doing nothing. Right. So it is important to prioritize that, right? Like for example, CO2 may be the biggest issue in many of the industries, but in certain industries, like maybe in the healthcare industry, CO2, no doubt, is still important, but I think waste management can be more important because there are a lot of medical waste that have to be taken care of and what should be done in over there. So what we did with the client is that we facilitated a few workshops and then we we conducted a few surveys and did a few forced ranking with them, right? We then extracted what are the more critical goals and objectives that they want to look at. And surprisingly, from the senior management team, the results of the senior management team, actually, the ranking was quite consistent, right? So in a way, it was quite easy for us to put them together because although everybody said everything was important, but when they were forced to rank, the results were very consistent. And because they were also told by their parent company to go to net zero at by 2030, and hence carbon reduction became number one. All right. Then because they are also very energy intensive, so energy efficiency became number two. Right. Mm-hmm. So that was the result of the ranking. And then because of that, we then created a framework that support these two key objectives, right? That means things that they invest in must reduce the carbon emission of the company, must help them to reduce the carbon emission of the company, and also to reduce the energy consumption going forward. So if those projects don't help in this aspect, then they should not be invested in.
Got it.
The other thing is that I think it's also very important that assumptions are stated clearly, because there are always things that we know and there are always things that we don't know, right? For things that we don't know and we still need to rely on them for certain decision making, then the assumptions must be clearly stated so that at any point in time, once those assumptions can be verified to be untrue, then I think certain actions have to be taken as well, right? We also have to make sure that we are aligned with what is globally accepted. Like, for example, if the client is wants to do a green bond, for example, then we will then advise them that they have to be aligned to maybe the Climate Bond Initiative or the Green Bond Principles. If the fund is going to be operating in Singapore, then we will advise them to follow certain of the MAS guidelines. Right. So MAS has the disclosure and reporting guidelines. So it is also important that whichever projects, they also have to be based on certain frameworks or policies that are in place, so that we don't have to start from ground zero all the time. And the chance of going wrong is also lower, because there's something to fall back on. So that's the first part. Then the second part would then be the metrics. Okay, this is where the heavy lifting comes in. Okay, what are the metrics that are required to support the goals and objectives? And from there, what are the data that have to be collected? Right. So there is a lot of hard work here, because this will then have to go into the all the nuts and bolts. Because with this, the client would then have to make sure that the relevant data is collected, put into the calculation, so that the assessment can be made correctly. Yeah. So the thing is that that's the first part, right? I mean, the process doesn't stop there. So for that client in particular, I mean, what we do is also, there is also going to be a regular tracking and monitoring of the assets. Like I mentioned earlier, it is important that we track and monitor how the assets or the projects perform. On a longer cycle, the framework has also to be reviewed, right? Because priorities may change over time, and there are also changes in the industry. So frameworks should also be reviewed to make sure that they remain relevant to the company.
That's great. I think there was one area also I wanted you to kind of tell me a little bit more about, which is about the Green Fund, which you alluded to a couple of times. What is this all about? I don't know if there's any confidentiality or compliance issues, but within the parameters that you can talk about, could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Sure. We are working with a partner to set up a green fund. So this green fund, the focus will be on the energy life cycle, right? Because energy is a key area in terms of sustainability, because for free development, energy is needed, right? And especially in Asia, where there is still a lot of growth, and for countries to grow, the energy consumption will grow with it as well, right? So that's why this fund is focused, number one, on energy, right? From converting, from electrification of the equipment, right? So instead of having fossil fuel cars, we support projects or support some of our technology partner to move to EV cars. Okay. This fund will also look at energy efficient project. So how can we introduce technology to reduce the use of energy in terms of lighting, in terms of heating or cooling, and so on. Next is we'll also look at energy generation. So solar is one key aspect of it. Then there's also energy storage, how the energy is being stored, whether the energy stored in different type of batteries, or it can also be stored in the form of hydrogen, and then also how energy is being distributed from generation to use, right? So this is where the focus is for the fund. And then, like I mentioned to you, this is also where the fund will, this fund will also be used to support smaller companies, because small companies need the technology to move ahead, but quite often they lack the capital. So this fund would then help them to reduce the cost of capital so that they can then pay back over the years.
Right. When we talked before, Boon-Siong, you talked about something called the zero capex financing model. What exactly is that?
Okay. So in this case, is that like I mentioned, we will reduce the upfront cost to the SMEs. They can apply to the fund to help them pay for the capex, and then whatever savings that they can get would then be used to pay back to the fund to recover the capex cost.
Got it. That's very interesting. And is there a general idea on, you know, some of the specs, like, you know, how big the fund is going to be ultimately be, if you can say, how many kind of target investments or target projects or target companies you have, or anything along those lines that you could share?
Sure. We are looking at the initial size of 10 million Singapore dollars, right? This will be used to support probably about one project every quarter, right? And then the expected break-even is going to be probably about 4 to 5 years for the project. So then after that, hopefully it can pay back for itself. But of course, we are also looking at increasing the size of the fund the steady state.
Right. Yeah. So you're looking at about 10 million Sing, one project per quarter. Obviously, could be, you know, on average, quarter and two, another quarter or whatever, but that would be the ideal kind of thing. And then you're looking at a kind of four or five year kind of growth period for the project or for the company. Okay, that's really great. And then potentially, you know, you'll have a larger increase the fund or set up other funds, second funds, like other companies do. Great. Well, listen, Boon-Siong, I really want to thank you for your time, because we had a really good conversation. And I think, you know, talking about how you help corporates in their sustainability journey is indeed becoming, you know, increasingly key for corporates' operations as well as fundraising, and also some interesting thoughts about the Green Fund as well. So thank you very, very much for your time today, Bunxiong.
Yeah, thanks very much, Joseph, for the time as well. I think it has been great talking to you, and I hope the audience learned something from this. And then if there are any questions, feel free to contact us.
Very good, very good. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. Please contact us for any thoughts on topics or comments. Contact details are in the show notes. The Asia Climate Finance Podcast is presented for educational purposes only. All information in the podcast must not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed professional before making investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed by our guests are personal and may not represent those of current or previous employers.